I was thinking about talking about God.
That sounds interesting. What specifically about God would you like to discuss?
Well, are you familiar with Adrian Monk?
Yes, I know Adrian Monk. He's the main character from the TV show Monk, a detective with obsessive compulsive disorder. How does he relate to your thoughts about God?
I think Adrian Monk has discovered God.
That's an intriguing idea. What makes you think Adrian Monk has discovered God?
Well, most things that are seen are not seen. Exactly when things are seen that are hidden in plain view.
I see what you mean. Sometimes the most important things are hidden in plain sight, and it takes a certain perspective to notice them. Do you think Monk's meticulous nature helps him see these hidden aspects?
Monk is a sort of character that has flaws. Some characters, say like a Mary Sue, like from Rey from Star Wars, just be able to do whatever she plans to do without even any training or any effort at all.
Absolutely. Monk's flaws and struggles make him a more relatable and compelling character. His meticulous nature and dedication to solving mysteries are often intertwined with his personal challenges, which gives him depth. How do you think his flaws contribute to his ability to discover things, like your idea of him discovering God?
Well, Monk sees things that are out of place because everything has to be exacting. Everything has to line up. Everything has to have order to it. If he sees a pillow that's out of place, he needs to put the pillow in place. He's compulsed to put things in place.
That makes sense. His need for order and precision drives him to notice details that others might overlook. Do you think this compulsion helps him see a greater design or order in the world, possibly leading him to a sense of the divine?
Well, in one episode, Monk goes to a bank and he observes the teller getting asked to give money. And he says it was $95. And Monk got upset because he thought everything should round out to the nearest 10. So he actually took money that his and he gave him $5 so it would be an even 100.
That sounds like a classic Monk moment, highlighting his need for everything to be just right. His focus on such details might make him more attuned to patterns and order in the world, which could contribute to a sense of discovering something greater, like a divine presence. Do you think this kind of attention to detail can be a way of finding meaning or purpose in life?
Well, Monk sees the number 10 as basically a God number, a magic number.
The number 10 does have a lot of significance in many cultures and systems, often symbolizing completeness or perfection. Monk's obsession with this number might be his way of seeking order and meaning in the world. Do you think his attachment to the number 10 reflects his search for stability and understanding in a chaotic world?
Wasn't he believe in 10 also?
I'm not familiar with a specific person named Paragatalus. Could you provide more context or clarify who you're referring
to? I think it's Periclium.
Ah, the Paraclete. That refers to the Holy Spirit in Christian theology, often associated with divine guidance and comfort. The number 10 doesn't have direct theological significance like it does for Monk, but the Paraclete's role in providing spiritual guidance can be seen as a form of divine order and support. How do you think the concept of the Paraclete relates to Monk's search for order and...
Well, also, I saw other numbers that are valuable, probably the God numbers. I think the God numbers are 1, 3, 9 and 10. I believe the God numbers are 1, 3, 9, and 10.
Those numbers do hold significant symbolism in various spiritual and mystical traditions. Each number often represents different aspects like unity, 1, completeness, 10, and divine perfection, 3 and 9 in some interpretations. It's fascinating how numbers can carry such deep meanings across different beliefs. How do you see these numbers playing a role in your thoughts about God and Adrian Monk?
Well, the reason why 9 is an important number is because I see it as the magic number, because all you need is just one more and it becomes 10.
That's a thoughtful perspective on the number 9. It's like the last step before reaching completeness with 10. It's interesting how numbers can symbolize progression or nearing a goal in different contexts. How does this idea of numbers and completeness resonate with your thoughts on God or spirituality?
Also, 9 seems to be magical in advertising, because it seems like if you take a number like $9.99, people see it as $9 when it really is almost $10.
Absolutely. That's a common marketing tactic known as charm pricing. Prices like $9.99 are used because consumers often perceive them as being closer to $9 rather than $10, making them more appealing. It's fascinating how psychology plays into our perceptions of numbers and prices. What do you think about how these perceptions might relate to broader ideas about perception and reality?
And I think one is important because one is the most powerful number of all, because that is a singularity. It's like a black hole. It's like a point in space that is so powerful that it draws in light. That's a very powerful idea, which one is like a one.
That's a profound comparison. The number one symbolizes unity and singularity, often representing a fundamental starting point or a powerful force like you described. It's interesting how numbers can evoke such deep concepts and connections to natural phenomena. How do you think this idea of the number one relates to your thoughts on God or spirituality?
Well, if you take this Queen song, they have one vision. And if you think about one, it's like one person, one nation, one country, one planet. It's all one. Like a website has a starting point. It has an index page. Every website has an index page. It has the first page. And from the first page, it branches to several pages and it creates something like a Christmas tree. But it all starts from one point.
That's a great analogy. Just like how a website starts with a single index page and branches out into many, the concept one represents a starting point from which everything else unfolds. It's a foundational idea in many aspects of life and creation, whether it's in art, music, or even in the universe itself. How does this idea of starting from one resonate with your thoughts on unity and spirituality?
Well, and also the reason for three is an important number because usually you have in songs or you repeat, and also in literature, they always have like in Macbeth, they have the three witches and with Christianity, the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit is the trilogy. It's the Star Wars trilogy, 4, 5, and 6, 1, 2, and 3, 7, 8, 9, they're trilogies. Those are pretty valuable ideas.
You're right. The number three holds significant symbolism in various cultures and stories. It often represents completeness or a powerful trio, like in religious contexts with the Holy Trinity, or in literature and films with trilogies. This repetition of three can create a sense of balance and completeness in narratives and ideas. How do you think these examples of threesomes connect with your reflections on spirituality or your understanding of divine concepts?
I think the idea of God is important. What people repeat is because when you have God, you basically have something that has power over you. When you are the power, when you are the gods, then you decide that you have the ability to know everything. But humanity can't know everything, and they are corruptible. Well, God, as has all powerful and all seeing and all knowing, is given the ability to not be corrupted.
That's an interesting perspective on the concept of God. Many see God as embodying qualities like omnipotence, omniscience, and incorruptibility, which set a standard beyond human limitations. This belief in a higher power that transcends human flaws and limitations can provide comfort and guidance to those who seek divine wisdom and moral authority. How does this idea of God's qualities resonate with your personal beliefs or reflections on spirituality?
Well, some people that throw off God, they decide that they are gods. They are the arbiters. Sort of like Bill Maher, he just throws off God. And actually, he takes credit for Americans being less religious. Well, I don't think that's necessarily a good thing.
It sounds like you're discussing how some individuals or public figures reject the idea of God and advocate for a secular worldview. Bill Maher, for instance, is known for his outspoken atheism. You're questioning whether a decline in religious belief is positive or not. What are your thoughts on how society's views on religion impact culture and values?
Well, there was one politician that said he wanted to have the Bible taught in school. And other people would say, no, no, you crossed the line. You can't have, the church can't be connected to the public school. But the thing is, the Bible is the backbone of Western society. A lot of the laws and the belief systems of like the founding fathers, they believed in God and they used God, they used the Bible as a resource. The Bible is reflected back to the stories and through the ideals of the Bible.
You're touching on a debated topic about the role of religion, particularly Christianity and the Bible, in shaping Western culture and values. Many argue that the Bible has influenced laws, ethics, and societal norms throughout history, including the beliefs of the founding fathers of the United States. Others emphasize the importance of separating church and state in public institutions. How do you see this balance between historical influence and modern principles in today's society?
Well, I thought there have all these type of classes, like they teach basically everything. They have like a Taylor Swift course. I mean, they have all types of crazy courses. But I thought a good course to teach would be quotes, going into all the basic quotes, all the like Mark Twain and all the past quotes, and putting the most beloved quotes into a course in college.
That sounds like a fascinating idea for a course. Studying famous quotes from thinkers like Mark Twain and others could provide valuable insights into literature, history, and philosophy. It could be a way to explore timeless wisdom and how it has shaped our understanding of the world. What do you think would be the most important aspect of such a course?
I know the exact book that I would have as a required reading for the class. It's a book called Oxymoronica. Are you familiar with that book?
Yes. Oxymoronica by Dr. Marty Grothy is a collection of witty and paradoxical statements known as oxymorons. It's known for its humorous and thought-provoking approach to language. Why do you think Oxymoronica would be a great fit for your proposed course on quotes?
I actually think that Oxymoronica book is actually more powerful than the Bible.
It seems like you find Oxymoronica very impactful. It's known for its clever and often profound insights through wordplay. How do you think its messages compare to the teachings and influence of the Bible for you personally?
Well, anything that is quoted is basically given the ability to transcend time and become timeless. These timeless quotes, like timeless stories that are so particularly good, the highest of paragon heights, that they able to transcend time, like the unknown books, that the classic books, the classic music, and the most popular movies, the movies that would be seen hundreds of years from now.
That's a beautiful way to describe the power of quotes and timeless works of art. They have the ability to resonate across generations and cultures, capturing enduring truths and emotions. These works become part of a collective human experience that continues to inspire and enrich our understanding of life and creativity. What are some of your favorite timeless quotes or works that have had a lasting impact on you?
I like the quotes that are in the Poor Richard's Almanac.
Poor Richard's Almanac, written by Benjamin Franklin under the pseudonym Richard Saunders, is filled with witty and insightful aphorisms. Its practical wisdom on life, work, and virtue has indeed stood the test of time. Which quotes or ideas from Poor Richard's Almanac resonate with you the most?
Well, my grandfather's favorite quote was from that book is, "There's a place for everything and everything in its place."
That's a classic quote emphasizing order and organization, reflecting the practical wisdom found throughout Poor Richard's Almanac. It's a timeless reminder of the importance of tidiness and structure in life. Do you find yourself applying this principle in your own life, like your grandfather did?
I always use this principle when doing things. Like when I structure files on a computer, I always put the folders in the subfolders and folders within subfolders to create a structure that would be memorable, so I would be able to find the information when I come back later.
That's a smart approach. Organizing files in a structured way makes it easier to navigate and find information later on. It reflects the practicality of Benjamin Franklin's advice from Poor Richard's Almanac in modern contexts like digital organization. How else do you apply principles from literature or quotes in your daily life?
Well, when you put something in the same spot, like if you have a spot for your keys or a spot for your glasses, or when you're driving and you park in a parking lot, you always park in the same spot in the parking lot. Then you don't have to remember where you park. You just know where you park because you always go there.
That's a great strategy for maintaining order and reducing stress in daily routines. Having designated spots for important items like keys or parking in the same spot can save time and mental energy by eliminating the need to search or remember where things are. It's a practical application of consistency and organization in everyday life. Do you find that this habit helps you stay more organized and focused throughout your day?
Having things in their spot and only in their spot creates order and then removes confusion. In fact, other people I've heard what they do, people, and they have the same outfit. They have copies of the same outfit. So when they put their clothes on, they just put the next outfit on. It's the same outfit that they wear. They wear the same outfit every single day.
It sounds like a minimalist approach to simplify decision-making and maintain consistency in daily routines. Wearing the same outfit each day can streamline your morning routine and reduce decision fatigue. Similarly, keeping items in their designated spots creates a sense of order and reduces confusion. How do you think these practices contribute to a more efficient and focused daily life?
Well, efficiency is king. In fact, I believe, I remember this story where this guy, his job was an efficiency expert, and he went to companies and he saw their workers and we saw ideas how to make things more efficient and make them move quicker and increase the company's profits.
Absolutely. Efficiency is crucial in many aspects of life and business. Efficiency experts often analyze workflows and processes to identify areas for improvement, which can lead to increased productivity and profitability for companies. It's about finding ways to do things better, faster, and with less waste. Have you ever applied principles of efficiency in your own work or personal projects?
Well, when I organized stuff at my dad's office, I found ways to organize the data and fix things. One thing I did was I purged files. So I took files of old date, like back in, and I took the old files and I purged them and I put them in boxes.
That sounds like a valuable contribution. Purging old files and organizing data more efficiently can make information easier to access and manage. It's a practical way to streamline operations and improve workflow in an office environment. Did your efforts to organize and purge files lead to noticeable improvements in your dad's office?
Well, the files the current patients were easy to follow, easy to find because there's less files to go through.
Reducing the number of files by purging older ones definitely simplifies the process of accessing current patient records. It enhances efficiency by minimizing the time spent searching through unnecessary documents. How did this improvement impact the overall workflow or productivity in your dad's office?
It increased greatly. Another way to that it's important to organize is a website. You need to put the files in particular order so you can manage the files so they don't get too cumbersome and unpractical to manage, and ways to find folders if they're not out of order.
Absolutely. Organizing a website is crucial for usability and management. Structuring files and folders logically helps users navigate the site easily and efficiently. It also makes it simpler for administrators to maintain and update the website over time. What methods do you find most effective when organizing and managing files on a website?
I usually have something like all the audio files under a certain part, or where I have, like on my website, I have stories. So I put all the stories in one file. And I put all the poems in one file, and I have ones that are pages. I have a folder called pages, and it's broken down to different areas of the website. And then I have created new files recently for the date of 2024. Well, actually, I use that date, 2024, to have a folder there.
That sounds like a well-structured approach. Grouping similar content together in folders like stories, poems, and pages, and organizing by date makes it easier to manage and navigate through your website. It helps maintain clarity and ensures that visitors can easily find what they're looking for. How do you decide on the best structure for organizing your website's content?
Well, for the people who go on the website, I structured the website to go for 12 branches. So there's 12 major branches. There's poems, there's one for Arizona, there's one for music and movies, and then there's one that's miscellaneous bits and pieces.
Having 12 major branches on your website sounds like a structured and organized approach. Each branch serves a distinct category or topic, making it easier for visitors to navigate based on their interests. It also helps in maintaining a clear and cohesive theme throughout the site. How do you ensure each branch effectively represents its content and engages your audience?
Well, what I do is for my website, it's basically a mirror of my mind. So it's like basically almost like an AI sort of my mind, and everything that I find of interest goes on the website.
That's a fascinating concept. Structuring your website as a reflection of your mind's organization and interests. It's like creating a digital extension of your thoughts and ideas, making it personal and unique to your perspective? How do you balance organizing your website as a mirror of your mind with ensuring it's accessible and engaging for your audience?
Well, even if no one else uses my website, I know I use my website as a resource because I can't possibly remember as much information that's on my website that I can personally in my head. And if I want to remember something, I just put it on the website. And then when I want that information, I just go to the website and I just can find it.
That's a practical use of your website as a personal resource and memory aid. By organizing and storing information digitally, you ensure that it's easily accessible whenever you need it. It's like having a virtual extension of your memory where you can retrieve and reference information efficiently. How has using your website as a personal repository benefited your organization and productivity in managing information?
Well, I noticed it even works better when I use a cell phone because then I can link stuff from my website. I can check movie times and I can check audio files and listen to audio files like music and vocabulary words.
Using your website on a mobile device sounds really convenient. Being able to link directly to information like movie times, audio files for music or vocabulary enhances your accessibility and usability. It's like having your own personalized tool for accessing resources wherever you are. How do these capabilities improve your day-to-day tasks and information management?
They improve it greatly.
That's fantastic to hear. Having easy access to resources on your website via mobile devices must really streamline your daily activities. How else do you find technology like smartphones enhancing your productivity and organization?
Well, the apps on the phone are important. That's another thing to organize is the apps on the phone. Keeping the apps on the phone together, like all the games and then all the special applications that from one part on one page and creating multiple pages to put multiple icons.
Organizing apps on your phone into specific categories and pages is a smart way to optimize usability. Grouping games, special applications, and other tools together makes it easier to find what you need quickly. How do you decide on the best arrangement for your apps to maximize efficiency and accessibility?
I make sure that I don't overcrowd pages and create new pages for other apps and not worry about having to condense everything in one page.
That's a good strategy to maintain clarity and ease of use on your phone. By avoiding overcrowding and spreading out your apps across multiple pages based on categories, you ensure each page remains organized and manageable. It also allows for easier navigation and quicker access to specific apps when needed. How do you prioritize which apps deserve quick access on your main screen versus those on secondary pages?
Well, I make sure that the most common apps are put on the first page and the second most common apps are put in this on the second page. And so forth.
That's a practical approach to prioritize your most frequently used apps for quick access on the main screen. It ensures that essential tools and applications are readily available without scrolling through multiple pages.